Hello, this is Don McPherson, your host of 12 Geniuses. Today's guest is Dr. Michael Norton. He is a Harvard Business School professor and the author of the book, The Ritual Effect. Dr. Norton is well known for his How to Buy Happiness TED Talk, which has been viewed nearly 5 million times. In our discussion, Dr. Norton and I talk about the power of establishing rituals to enhance performance in our personal lives and at work. Dr. Norton explains how a ritual is different from a habit. He talks about how to create rituals that last, and he says a bottom-up approach is the best way to establish effective rituals in the workplace. We switch gears to finish the interview with what Dr. Norton's research has taught him about what people commonly get wrong about their money. This episode of 12 Geniuses is brought to you by The Star Conspiracy. The Star Conspiracy is the B2B marketing agency for innovative brands creating the future of workplace solutions. For more information, head over to thestarconspiracy.com. Dr. Norton, welcome to 12 Geniuses.
Thanks so much for having me.
You have written the book, The Ritual Effect. It's coming out in April of 2024, and we're going to talk about rituals. Maybe we can start out by talking about what a ritual is and how it's different from a habit, a tradition, or a superstition.
I think about it as a ritual is sort of something that is embedded with more. Habits are kind of the thing that we do. So in the morning, we brush our teeth and we take a shower. That's the habit that we have. For some people, if I say, hey, try switching the order tomorrow. So do the opposite order. Some people say, sure, no problem, because it's just a habit. It's not anything beyond getting that done. But for other people, and it's typically about half of people, if I say, hey, try switching it up tomorrow, they say, no. And I say, why not? And they say, I don't know. But I had a weird feeling in my stomach when you asked me to switch the order. And I feel like I wouldn't feel ready for the day if I did it in the other order. But I don't really have any reason why. And I think about that as it's not a ritual like people in robes with candles singing, of course, but it's moving you down there because now it's not just getting the tasks done, but the order in which you do them has extra meaning for you. Or it's, for some people, it's the exact time that they do it, or they have to have this exact toothpaste in order to feel ready to go. We add these things that aren't really required to get the task done, but they embed more meaning and more emotion in them. And it can be for good or bad. I can really feel ready for the day, but if my spouse interrupts me, then I actually feel worse because now my ritual's been disrupted. But that again shows the power of rituals, that they have this extra emotion that they evoke in us.
Yeah, I think you grew up Catholic and I did as well. And that is a culture of rituals.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it. And the reason why I asked about superstitions is there's a part in the book where you're writing about Wade Boggs, and Wade Boggs is the famous baseball player, and I think he wouldn't step on the field until 5:17, until the clock showed 5:17, and that seems, well, that's a very superstitious to me, or it seems like a superstition, and so that's why I asked the question, how do you delineate between a ritual and a superstition?
Yeah, I think that superstitions for me are kind of a subset of rituals, so I think of rituals as applying in so many domains of life. You know, a wedding is a ritual, a funeral is a ritual. Superstitions are often with a specific goal of having good luck. So we use rituals in all sorts of contexts. Like we use them to get amped up. We use them to calm down sometimes. We use them to show love. We use them to get through the holidays. We really have all these rituals that we use. Superstitions are what we're really trying to get done there specifically is either ward off bad luck or bring us good luck. And it's so interesting to me that we use the same kinds of behaviors to get married, like we wear a specific thing when we get married and we would feel weird if we weren't wearing it. We do the exact same thing when we want our sports team to win. We wear a specific thing and we'd feel weird if we didn't wear it. So it's like a huge range of human life that rituals come into play. And superstitions are one of the funniest, I think, and most interesting ones because people get so creative and idiosyncratic with their superstitions.
How can rituals help individuals perform better at work and at home?
Speaking of Wade Boggs, one of the most fun places to study performance rituals is in professional athletes or really in famous people more broadly. So like Beyonce, for example, all of these really famous people, if you look at what they do before they go on, which might be to sing, it might be to dance, it might be to play the piano, it might be to try to hit a baseball across all these different domains, people have really, really elaborate pre-performance rituals. Nadal's really famous for this because he has like 62 motions that he makes, I'm making the number up, including he picks his wedgie before every single serve. So we know that in these really, really intense situations, these people turn to other things as well. They practice, of course, and things like that, but they also turn to rituals to kind of get them in the right mindset. And that's what they say. If you look to see why they do it, they say, it makes me feel ready to go. Almost like toothbrushing and showering in the right order in the morning. Not as big stakes, but for them, they also feel like I'm ready to go. And they do it publicly so we get to see it. For ourselves, when we ask people what they do before they perform, often people say, you know, I actually do this little thing, but I do it privately. One of the most common ones is people will go into the bathroom and talk to themselves in the mirror. So if they've got a big presentation or a big meeting coming up, what do? We go in the bathroom and literally talk to ourselves out loud and say, you've got this, you can do this. Other people do different things before meetings. They might have like a specific routine that they go through, a specific beverage that they like to have right before they go on. And again, we see just like, not that we're like Nadal, he's a lot better at tennis than us, but we do see people saying, you know what, when I go and do that thing, it does make me feel like I'm more ready to go. We do see that rituals have benefits, but they also have risks. So I wish I could just say, whenever we do rituals, they're fantastic for us and we should be doing them all the time. That's not how anything works in life. It's the same with pre-performance rituals as well. When you have them set up and ready to go, if you execute it, you will say, I feel ready to go. If it gets disrupted for any reason, sometimes you've gotten the time wrong. You know, you thought you had 5 minutes, but in fact, you had 2 minutes. Then it actually can be disruptive. It can cause more anxiety if we can't execute the ritual. One of my favorite students I ever had, an undergraduate at Harvard, told me that she was an athlete. And she said she created a pre-performance ritual that was incredibly elaborate on purpose, so that it was extremely difficult for her to complete, so that if she did badly, she could blame it on the fact that she didn't do her ritual correctly. But if she did well, she would say, I did the ritual correctly. So, I mean, really elaborate, if you think about what we're doing psychologically with our rituals, all in the service of trying to feel the way we want to feel in that moment.
Let's talk about work for a moment, because the word culture is thrown about quite a bit in the workplace. And this is largely a leadership audience in North America and even around the world. So how can leaders use rituals to enhance performance on their teams and at work?
One of the first things I do when I talk to a company about their rituals is kind of ask them for a gut check on how they feel about starting up a team ritual or an organizational ritual. And the number one response is eye rolls. It really is. Oh my God, this guy's going to make us do this thing. You know, management is going to tell us we all have to do this thing. It's going to be terrible. People think of corporate retreats like, oh my God, they're going to make us do a trust fall again. This is just like terrible waste of time. And it is the case, in fact. And often what people say is, yeah, I had a manager and they saw like a TED talk or something. And then they came into work and they were like, hey, we got to start doing all this stuff. An employee's reaction is absolutely not. And I think that's really important, because we tend to think, you know, what can a manager do to kind of institute this new practice? But in our research, what we see actually is that rituals that are really meaningful for people are bottom up. In other words, they come from employees themselves. When you mandate a ritual, people will do it because you're the boss, but you get the eye roll. The nice thing there is actually they're all doing the eye roll at the exact same time. So they're bonding as a group, which is kind of nice. It's just they also hate you a lot, so there's a little risk there. But when they come up with them themselves, we do see people in very simple things. Like one team had a ritual where there was a 5-person team. So each person was responsible for lunch one day a week. Very, very simple, but they ate together at the same time every day. They got to express a little bit of their individuality because I could choose the meal for us on that day. But it was just such a regular thing. And when you ask teams, you know, do you have things like that you do? Some teams say we do, and other teams say we absolutely don't. And we see in the data that teams that have those kinds of rituals that they do together see their work as more meaningful. They not only see the ritual as more meaningful, but they actually come to see the work itself as more meaningful. And it's almost as though we, by bonding together as a team in a way that's not really about work, this is just lunch, but having that experience as a team changes us as a team and does help us to see whatever boring task we have to do next at work as filled with a little bit more meaning.
Can you give a couple of other examples? You talk about buying lunch once a week or something like that, but can you give a couple of other examples of really effective rituals in the workplace?
You know, we saw when everyone started working from home because of the pandemic, one thing that happens is rituals get disrupted. So, for example, you can't have lunch together every day of the week. And we saw people get really creative on rituals that they came up with on Zoom, because so much is happening on Zoom now. And one of the ones that I really loved is people just did a very quick, at the beginning of every meeting, everyone would click the emoji that expressed how they were feeling. And it just populated. You know, if you had a screen of 16 people or whatever it might be, you just saw how every single person was doing, which means you can kind of take an average of the group, but you can also see maybe who needs a little bit more help today. And that's the tiniest, quickest kind of ritual. You know, sometimes when I say ritual, people think it's going to be a 4-hour long meditation retreat or something like that. Those I'm sure are great too, but I often mean these really small ones, but they become quite meaningful. And what's important is you don't just do it one time. Doing it one time is nice, right? I get a gut check of the group. But what happens is we become a group that does that emotional check-in at the beginning of every meeting. And we come to rely on it, and it comes to be part of how we do things. And we know that because other teams don't do that. This is something for us, and it shows that we care about each other. It shows that we're in this together. So these really small actions sometimes can have a big, big effect when we come up with them ourselves, as I said, and when we repeat them over time.
How do we as individuals create our own rituals to really enhance our performance? And then I'll have the same question for how do we do this as a team?
Let me just say, one of the things that's frustrating about rituals is the way that it works is not we can uncover that it's 3 claps and 2 stomps and then shout this phrase and that's the key, whereas 1 clap and 8 stomps doesn't work. That would have been amazing. I mean, actually, it would have been very satisfying if we could have said, this is the sequence of actions that works for every human in order to get them to feel the way that they want to feel. And unfortunately, I mean, more interestingly, because humans are so interesting, that's not how it works. People have to come up with their own kind of ritual often based on things that are meaningful to them. So it can be, and that means we have a very wide range of what it might be that really is meaningful for us. But even something like coffee in the morning, you know, when you get to work, you have coffee when you get there. But we ask people, what order do you have coffee? And some people say, well, I do email first, then I chat with my coworkers, then I have coffee. And other people say, you know what, I always have to do coffee first, then coworkers, and then I check my email. And it's a very subtle difference, but again, like toothbrushing and showering, changing the order kind of makes us feel a little bit off. We have these things that we do in order to kind of feel like we've left home behind and now we're ready for work. But if you hate coffee, I can't tell you start drinking coffee first every single morning and that's going to work. You know what I mean? It has to be from you, things that matter to you. And then the key is that you institute them and then you keep doing them over time, that they become not just things you do, but a little bit of a ritual.
Mm-hmm. And on the team side of things, or on the organization side of things, how do we jumpstart those?
Yeah,
same thing.
Very similar. I think that, again, it would have been amazing if we said, if everybody stands up and claps together for 2 minutes, you know, performance increases by 600% or something like that. But it really is so idiosyncratic to the individual and to the individual team as well, that it's really the team that comes up with things that are meaningful to them. We often see, for example, inside jokes are really a sign that a team has its own culture. And often those are a little bit ritualistic. You know, we always make fun of the same thing in our team, and other teams don't share that same language with us, but we do it regularly. It shows us who we are. It shows us that we're different from other teams and that we're kind of committed to each other and have our own little subculture that matters to us.
What sort of criticism are you getting? Because when I think of culture, I think of cult, and we have seen cultish type organizations before. And when you start to throw in ritual with that, you know, maybe that is going to have some people recoil a little bit. What are you thinking?
For sure. I mean, we see rituals are good and bad, like most things that affect humans. So even thinking about when your own ritual is disrupted, it would have been better to not have a ritual so you're not so anxious that you couldn't finish your ritual. And for at the aggregate level, these kinds of group level rituals can really bond people together, including nations together. You know, we have most countries have a national anthem. People kind of know the words to that, and it bonds us together. But at the same time, it can also cause difference as well, or highlight difference as well. So we've done a lot of research to show that the problem is it's not just that we like our rituals. That would be really nice. It's that we think they're right. And as soon as
there's a bit of divisiveness in there, right?
That's exactly right. And so if we're doing a ritual and you start doing something different from me, I don't just say, oh, what an interesting deviation. I say, you're doing it wrong. Do it more like me. And so they do have this sense of bonding us together, but also sometimes dividing us from others also. And so we're always trying to think, and that's true in organizations, and it's true at a really macro level, at a cultural level. We're always trying to think about what's the line between getting the benefits of bonding without having these other benefits that could be negative for groups down the road.
Is there anything else about rituals that I should have asked you that I didn't?
I do think it's very interesting to think about auditing your day and just seeing what are the things that you do, because we're often doing things and we're not quite aware of them. What are the things that you do that kind of get you ready for things or help you get through things or whatever it might be? And just notice them a little bit more and own them a little bit more. It's fun to do on your teams as well. You can literally look at your team like you're an outsider and say, my gosh, what is happening in this team? What are we really like? And it's a very interesting thing to do, actually. So I'd encourage folks to just try it out and see what's kind of going on under the surface already.
So I have you for one more minute, and I have to ask you this question because I watched your TED Talk around money buying happiness. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us one thing that people get wrong about money?
We tended to study, so we have a bunch of research on how to help people save more. So the main thing is save more money for sure. But given that people are going to spend money because we want to spend money, we also tried to see, well, what are the right ways to spend money? Meaning, what are the things that bring us the most happiness? And are we correct in our intuition? So when we spend our money, we're thinking, I want to get this thing. We can look and see in the data, does it really make you happy? And one of the things we see, unfortunately, is that buying stuff, which is a lot of what we do, doesn't seem to pay off in very much happiness. It doesn't actually usually make us unhappy to buy stuff for ourselves. It's not like if I go buy myself a coffee, I've ruined my day. Of course not. It just doesn't do much really to change my day if it's my fifth coffee of the day. So what we showed in our research with Liz Dunn and Lara Acton was that actually shifting the arrow from yourself to somebody else, which could be as simple as buying somebody else a coffee or donating to charity or helping out a coworker, these are the kinds of things actually that lead to a little bit more lasting happiness. We're still going to buy ourselves stuff all the time, of course, because that's how we are. But thinking a little more about when you're about to spend, reach for your wallet or about to click Apple Pay or whatever it might be, just thinking, hey, is this purchase really going to make me happier? Or is it going to be just lost in the background and I could think about doing something else with this money?
Is there any combination between rituals and saving money?
We haven't actually done that research, but I think it's a fascinating idea, especially in terms of couples, I think, actually, because sometimes couples disagree about saving habits and things like that. We do think about how do we get couples on board with a practice of saving that they both agree on, but we haven't done the research yet to see if we can help people out with that. But it'd be a huge win if we could.
I hope that's the subject of your next book, and I hope you come back on the show then. Dr. Norton, thank you for your time, and thank you for being a genius.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to 12 Geniuses, and thanks to the Star Conspiracy for sponsoring this week's show. We will be back next week with another episode exploring the trends shaping the way we live and work. Thanks for listening, and thank you for being a genius.